show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Folks, for those of you who have been with us for a long time, we got some big news for everyone who's with us, but we've got some big news that we're going to share here. We're going to lead off the show with it. But before we get to that, of course, our introductions. I'm your host, Jeff Herr. With me, the masterful Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very somewhat rainy earlier, but nice evening?
I can speak this week. Last week, we didn't record anything because I've been trying to get over this stupid cold, and you can still kind of hear it, I think, in my voice a bit, but last week I had nothing.
It sounds smooth as silk.
I had nothing last week until a little stretch in the afternoon one day where I sounded like Kylo Ren.
I was just about to say, I believe the way it was described when deciding if we were going to be able to record was that you sounded like Kylo Ren.
I mean,
they sell masks at the store with voice modulators, so you just saved yourself $30 right there.
I shouldn't have taken any of the cold medicine.
Should not have taken the cold medicine?
No, I because then it's useful. Like if I still sounded like Kylo Ren, then we could play that off as like a sponsor.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like special guest,
we're
Kylo
supportive.
Ren.
Yeah,
the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
I will take. I can't even do it now. So,
have you seen the? Have you seen the Saturday Night Live with
the boss,
the cover boss Kylo Ren?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's the funniest skit I've seen in years on that show. But enough about Star Wars and Kylo Ren.
Right.
I said that we have some big news, and I was not lying, folks. So when I was gone, we'll call it my paternity leave from the show, we had Craig Brown and Hunter Samuels were guests. And since then, they are part of a – we'll call it a super blog now, of all the a lot of the very prominent bloggers for the Royals in Kansas City, and they have all joined together, and they're coming under the Baseball Prospectus label. So the Baseball Prospectus is rolling out this thing where they're doing every major league city is getting its own kind of mini site now, similar to a fan site that Mike and I used to write for the Kings of Coffee. Similar type of a thing, but a little bit not quite as broad, a little bit more refined, a little bit more professional, probably closer to like an ESPN page for a team, but within the Baseball Prospectus umbrella. So anyway, like I mentioned, Craig Brown is kind of heading it up with a friend of the show, David Leskey, as well. And as part of this conglomeration of Royals prominent bloggers and such, they want a podcast to be a part of it, and we as the Kansas City Baseball Vault are going to be that podcast. So starting with the next show after this one that you will hear, we will be under the Baseball Prospectus umbrella. Now, what does this mean? Nothing really in terms of, you know, you as the listener, that the show's not really going to change. We're going to keep doing our thing. They're not putting any sort of weird restrictions on what we do, on how we talk, how we deal with whatever. It's going to be basically just the same show, but now you're going to find us through the Baseball Prospectus website or Baseball Prospectus Kansas City website. And we're going to kind of have that extra tag now. So it's always been brought to you by Kelly's, but now we're going to be able to say, hey, we're part of the Baseball Prospectus Network. So pretty pumped. Mike, congratulations to you. I think as part of this show, I think it's just Woo-hoo. It's awesome. Yeah, we're both really excited about it. And, you know, we've put in a lot of hard work on this show over the years. So it's always, you know, the more and more stuff we do, the greater it feels, you know, getting advertisers, getting people to come to meetups, getting all those things, you know, just having you guys listeners interact on Twitter and emails. And, you know, when we used to do the live show and have the chat, that was awesome as well. So, you know, all that kind of leading up to this being, I mean, this is pretty, it's pretty cool. I'm happy about it.
Yeah. And if you weren't happy about it, it's too late. Like you said, Jeff, the show really isn't going to change at all. I mean, they've pretty much told us, hey, just keep doing what you're doing. It's going to be located differently. So right now, if you go to KansasCityBaseballVault.com, it's got our archives and all of our recent episodes and blog posts and such. That's essentially going to be quiet. We're not going to post anything new to that other than this show that you're listening to, and we'll probably post something to help redirect people and show them where to go. If you are subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play Music or whatever podcast app or service you use, the podcast itself will still upload from the same stream, so you're not going to need to update anything on that front. The only thing that would change is if you go to visit the site that our Twitter feed and our Facebook feed will spit out, will be linking back to that Kansas City Local Baseball Prospectus site. We might get some new artwork to kind of, you know, sprucing up the place. We've been working under the same vault artwork since basically we kicked it off back in, what, May of 2012 when we were on 1510.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know,
wow,
that,
has
that's
it been that long.
It really Almost has. Yeah. I mean, we've been doing the vault side of this probably now longer than we did the Royal Man Report, which started this whole thing back in 2011. So
that's a good point.
It's really exciting. I was thinking about this when Craig brought it up to me that, you know, Baseball Prospectus was a big, big part of me getting into blogging in the first place, me looking deeper into baseball and stats and concepts and things like that. Back in, back in like 2004, 2005, I used to frequent royalboard.com, which was just a message board of nonsense. And everybody loved Shane Costa, and everybody thought that Calvin Pickering was going to be great. And none of that ever happened. Yeah. but a lot of people, that was when I first started to see things like OPS and OPS Plus and WAR and, you know, all these different numbers. I didn't know what they meant. I didn't really know at all what they meant. And it wasn't until a few years later I was working at Borders, and every day I would leave my shift and I would walk past a bookcase of baseball books. And one day before spring training in 2007, you know, I was excited by Alex Gordon and Zach Greinke and Dayton Moore's first full year and Gil Mesh had signed and all this other stuff. And there was a book on the shelf and it was called Baseball Between the Numbers by the Baseball Prospectus staff. And I took it down and I sat down at lunch and kind of flipped through it. And one of the first things in it is an essay by Nate Silver, who, you know, is one of the key guys from Baseball Prospectus history. And it basically broke a lot of that stuff down. A lot of the stuff I didn't understand before, it really pointed it out pretty nicely by a comparison of Babe Ruth to Barry Bonds, and it showed context of the players they played against, and you know, all of their defensive and offensive, and in Ruth's case, pitching, and all of those things combined into one kind of, you know, examination, and that's where it started to click for me, and you know, so really excited to be a part of Baseball Prospectus through this local site. Don't have the full URL. I think they said it's going to be kansascity.locals.baseballprospectus.com. But if you go to baseballprospectus.com, right at the top, there's a locals link, and the drop down will show you all the localities. The site is going to launch on the 21st of March. That is a Monday. So it's going to be pretty exciting. You know, Dave Leske is bringing everybody from Pine Tar Press in. Craig Brown's bringing everybody from Royals Authority in, and basically they're all going to absorb. So it's like you said, it's super blog. It's this is something back, you know, the first year when I was doing Kings of Coffin, I was like, this would be really cool to get, you know, all these guys together and just make one big blog. And you know, it makes sense to put them under Baseball Prospectus because, you know, for so many people that is a huge resource of baseball writing and thought and research. And so to have any involvement at all, even back in, you know, All-Star weekend in 2012 when we were able to be part of a panel, that was cool enough, but this is even better. This is, you know, we're able to just kind of be an actual part of that site and that kind of brand, I guess, if you want to call it. So really excited. But again, we're not going to change that much. We're probably still going to talk about Kylo Ren every now and then, or The Walking Dead, and we'll probably have our digressions that turn into who knows what. But we're gonna try some new things too. Maybe try to get more guests and maybe more writers from Baseball Prospectus to talk about different things and concepts. So, you know, hopefully you guys stick with us and come along for the ride, and we'll have a lot of fun with it.
Absolutely. You know, and they've been, I'd say they, you know, their Baseball Prospectus, definitely one of the things that helped us kind of along the way, in the sense that, you know, two of our recurring main guests, if you will, in the early going, that really kind of helped us up our profile a little bit and gave us great content, was Jason Parks and Kevin Goldstein, both of whom are now working for Major League Baseball teams, but were writers for Baseball Prospectus at the time. And, you know, they came through along with the, when the All-Star game was in 2012, or when it was in Kansas City in 2012, and they came through and they did the blogger panel, or they did the writers scouting panel. I can't remember exactly what that was now, it's been so long ago, but, and we had the blogger panel right after it, which Craig was a part of as well. So, you know, there's been that kind of loose intertwining with Baseball Prospectus for a long time. And it's an organization that, like you said, I kind of had a similar road when, you know, I always paid attention to baseball, but in terms of, you know, I think by the average fan, I would be considered a baseball nerd these days. And, you know, that was something that it didn't come about, you know, just kind of immediately. I had to do a lot of research. I had to say, okay, you know, similar to you, you know, like, what's OPS, OPS plus, you know? And I'm like, well, they got the OPS statistic. What do they need the OPS plus for? What's the difference? I don't understand.
Why know? Is and there a fourth column?
This doesn't make any sense.
What does that mean?
Why do they call it a triple slash line when there's only two slashes? But actually the full one is the triple slash line with the OPS, but that's just adding the two numbers together. But anyway, point being, Baseball Prospectus was one of the places where I came to as kind of a resource that not only had those statistics, but also had a way to explain them. And one of the best things that they had was, you know, you talk about like Nate Silver and, you know, Rainey Gisarelli, who was one of the founders of Baseball Prospectus, who's a Royals fan, Royals writer, or writes about the Royals, I should say, not necessarily a Royals writer. But and then, you know, Jason Parks, Kevin Goldstein, those are guys that, as writers, they were able to go into the details, but still explain it in a way that someone like me, who you know, wasn't initially super into all that stuff and kind of trying to figure it out, was able to understand. So when I started writing for you, Mike, at Kings of Kauffman, and we had that's kind of when I really started digging into that stuff. Baseball Prospectus was a huge resource. And then ever since then, like I said, there's kind of been that loose intermingling, and it's really great to have it now be official, if you will. So bigger and better things for the Kansas City Baseball Vault podcast now. And we're very excited to be a part of it and thankful for Craig and Leske and Baseball Prospectus and everything for having us, allowing us to be a part of it.
Yep. And it's also important to note that everything on the local sites is completely free. So, I mean, I would still recommend, if you're really into baseball research and playing with the numbers and things like that, you may want to subscribe, but if you just want to get the Royals content or even any of the other local sites, it's going to be completely free to you, so you don't have to worry about subscription or paywall or anything like that. So that's another really cool benefit of these new local sites that they're putting out.
Indeed. So stay tuned, and we'll get the – we'll definitely – the site will be linked to their – I'm sorry, the podcast will be linked to the new site from, you know, Twitter account, everywhere that you can find us now. It'll be linked back to there. But, yeah, if you automatically download it type of thing, like Mike said, nothing will change, and we'll still be pumping out the same great, if somewhat nerdy, content. So, yeah. With that, we'll move on and get to the actual show we were planning. So, Mike, we're in that kind of lull period again, where the newness of spring training has now worn off, and the excitement that, hey, baseball is actually here, has worn off. And this is kind of the calm before the storm, if you will. Not only is spring training starting to get into that grind period before the season actually starts, but then we've also got March Madness starting, NCAA tournament starts this weekend. So there's going to be what seems like very little going on in baseball, because there's little going on in general, but also because a lot of people are going to be paying more attention to the basketball tournament. But there were some interesting things happening this week for the Royals, namely roster cuts happened. So the kind of first big swing of roster cuts took place, and some of the names that were sent down, outfielders, and we'll kind of talk about this with the implications of this particular set later, but outfielders Bubba Starling, Jose Martinez, Brett Ebner, and Jorge Bonifacio all optioned to the minor leagues. Chester, some other notables, Chester Cuthbert was optioned down to AAA. I think he's, in terms of infielders, he's kind of that first guy up, I think. I don't know. I guess maybe he's kind of stuck there at third base. He doesn't have a ton of versatility, but I think if they need an infielder, I think he's the guy they want to bring up. And then Matt Strom was sent to AA, and that's something that Mike and I were kind of talking about before we recorded, about that being Strom only started 11 games in the minor leagues last year, and started in low A Lexington, ended in high A Wilmington, and now he's starting the season now in Northwest Arkansas. And if you remember from our show with Jim Callis, Matt Strom is the guy that when we asked for a guy who's maybe not on that radar in that top 10 category yet for a Royals prospect, but who could break out and step into that category, Matt Strom was the guy that he talked about. And if you listen to the radio, you know, local radio, and they talk about things like that, you know, young pitchers in the system to beyond the big names, your Zimmer and Almontes, the kind of depth names, and Matt Strom gets brought up a lot, and he's a guy that, who knows, could take a step forward perhaps. And you know, he's been moving kind of quick. If he continues to move quick, who knows, maybe he's just another guy that can provide a little depth in the rotation here in the future. But first thing we'll talk about is we'll hold off on that for a second. Just with those names that I mentioned, Mike, and then the rest of the names, any of them that I'm not going to go through the whole list here, but right, what were the ones that jumped out at you the most that you thought, well, maybe they'd spend a little bit more time with big leaguers? And of course you always get the Ned Yost answers. Oh, well, we wanted to make sure they played every day. That's why we sent them down. But, you know, which were the ones that jumped out at you the most?
Well, I kind of thought they would have maybe Ebner or Jose Martinez up a little bit longer, just because Jerod Dyson is going to be hurt. You know, he's still out until somewhere in the middle of April or maybe into that third week. So they do have something in right field that they need to kind of take a look at. And, you know, those seem like two guys. Martinez just went crazy last year in Omaha, and Ebner had his best season ever. But Ebner, you know, pretty underwhelming spring training. Martinez, there's still skepticism. You know, he hit pretty well. He didn't really walk, didn't really have much power. But, you know, these are also like 18 at-bats and between, you know, each player. Bubba's not too big of a surprise. Cuthbert may be a little bit of a surprise just because I think he is one of those guys that will be their first call up if there's an injury to either, you know, maybe Moustakas or Eric Hosmer, you know, a guy who can play the corners and has played some second base. So that was kind of surprising. I'm a little surprised that they optioned Kyle Zimmer down this early. He had been pitching pretty well. He's somebody who seemed like might be in the mix for some kind of a spot, but if this means that they get an opportunity to get him some more innings and get him more work in you know, a different, you know, without interrupting anybody else in the big league team, then I suppose that's what, you know, they're looking at there. And you know, I kind of thought Balbino Fuenmayor might get a little longer look too, but you know,
great Balbino.
Yeah, hit a home run today off Cole Hamels apparently in another game. So yeah, I don't know. Not really too many big surprises. A lot of names that we're kind of used to seeing. You know, a lot of the kind of big prospect names are involved here, but it also does go back to, you know, Ned Yost, what he's saying. Hey, these are guys who get an opportunity to get a few more at bats every day. They don't have to come in as the regulars get more at bats and more innings during the main games. You know, these guys would be limited to like one at bat and three innings. And, you know, if they're still kind of developing and the Royals are still getting a look at them, you know, it doesn't really benefit them that much to go through and see what's going on there. So, yeah, I'm not terribly surprised. I kind of figured some of the outfielders they would kind of keep up there just to get a better look at that, but it seems like they're narrowing that down, which we'll talk about in the second segment today. But yeah, I mean, it's starting to take shape. It's, you know, this is the first step. They're going to start kind of chipping more guys down to camp. It'll start narrowing down to mostly guys on the 40 man and a few guys who aren't, who might be fighting for jobs. And you know, you just kind of see what happens. I mean, right now you're kind of looking at what's going to shake up with that starting rotation, who's going to cover the back two spots there. You're looking at the bullpen, who's maybe the last guy in the bullpen. There's a second base battle, a right field battle, and maybe a battle for the last spot on the bench. And that's kind of about it. You know, there's not a whole lot else to really figure out. The Royals are kind of set. So I guess in that sense, it makes sense to bump a lot of these guys down to minor league camp so that they can play every day. So they're not waiting on Eric Hosmer to get pinch ran for in the seventh, and then, you know, they only get those two innings and that's it. So, you know, no big surprises, but
yeah, I think it's kind of funny. You know, I shouldn't feel this way because the Royals have had three consecutive winning seasons, two straight World Series trips, won a World Series, this whole deal, but, you know, still just so many years of losing. You think, I mean, how many years were we in this position, or not in this position, but in this, at this period, this point in spring training saying, okay, what do we know? And we know it's the opposite. Instead of, you know, two or three minor questions, we only had two or three minor answers. It's like, okay, well, we know Joaquin Soria is our closer, and we know, you know, Gilmesh is going to start opening day, and, you know, that's kind of it. You know, so that
Kyle Davies will be involved somewhere.
Kyle Davies will be out there. Luke Hochaver, opening day starter. Yeah. You know, it's just so funny to, you know, it's always great to kind of remember where you came from and how far we've come, but there's no, yeah, there's really no huge questions. The questions the Royals have are the same ones they've had for the last 3 years. And like I said, you know, three winning seasons, World Series, all that. So, you know, there are things that can be overcome, but it's still, you know, what are they going to get from second base? What are they going to get from right field? What are they going to get from the back two spots in the rotation? And the front three spots have been filled by different people, but over the last 3 years, they've been pretty well solidified. And it's just been that back end that's had issues or had question marks. So it'll be kind of interesting. One of the things that's jumped out at me, and it doesn't, it's only tangentially related to the list of roster cuts, is I was really hoping that the Royals were giving, it seemed like the Royals in earnest were giving someone like a Christian Colon a real opportunity to kind of seize that second base job. Because, and I heard a little bit of talk about this on the radio on the way home, and it's very true and very, I think everyone can see it, that the Royals are now in that position where money doesn't have to make the decision for you. You know, obviously the money, you want to see him play, but it's not, you know, Jose Guillen and Mike Jacobs and all this kind of stuff. It's, you know, what's going to make this team win? And if the Royals have to eat a salary like Omar Infante, I mean, they're probably, you know, probably weren't ever going to just cut the guy, but if the Royals have to eat that salary as he rides the bench and just plays in kind of a backup role because a better player is there, then that's a decision that they'll make, because, you know, they want to win another World Series and want to keep this train moving. So I really do think that, you know, Christian Colon was, they not only did they wanted him to seize it, and it's early and it's spring training and there's all that stuff, but he's definitely not seized the opportunity.
No.
Last, I haven't looked it up today, but last I heard 17, and just hasn't looked that sharp. So really unfortunate. He had the biggest moment of his life, and probably he'll never have a bigger one, last year when he got that what ended up being the game-winning RBI in the World Series. And it's just, you know, that was kind of disappointing to me. I don't know how you, I don't know if you feel the same way, but.
Well, I figured that Colon was going to have an opportunity. When we talked about this, let's see, I talked about this with Hunter, I think, a few weeks ago, where, you know, basically we felt like Colon was just going to have to completely crush to really get it, because there is still the money issue and there's the veteran and experience issue. Plus Infante now has seemingly, you know, his elbow is healthy now. He's had surgery on it to shave down bone spurs and everything. So that's finally not supposed to be an issue. And, you know, they, neither one of them for a while really did anything. Colon is still hitless in camp, and it's just like, you know, and in some of the cases when I've been listening on the radio, it sounds like, okay, someone makes a good play, and there's not a lot you can do about that. You know, no. So, and at this stage, the Royals, a guy like Colon, he's got a little bit of major league experience. They have a pretty good idea what he's going to be. It's not like, I don't think he's going to get turfed down to Omaha and have to just be there. I think he's still going to be somebody who will make the team pretty easily. But at this point, you know, Infante's gotten a few hits the last couple days. I think got like two hits today. So he's actually kind of doing something. He's, you know, maybe giving signs of hope. Now, granted, it's like 10 games. It's like 10 spring training games for each of them. It's not a whole lot to go off of. You know, small sample size on top of Infante's DH'd half his games. So, you know, I don't know if there's a clear thing, but it's also going to be really difficult from here on for Colon to upstage him. I do think that Colon is the better player overall, but if Infante is healthy, maybe that does change it. So it's, I guess it's one of those deals where, you know, maybe you expect nothing from Omar, and if he gives you anything, you kind of come out ahead, and then that gives you Colon, who can maybe play around the diamond a little better than Infante could. His arm is okay, you know, but I don't know if he can make that shortstop throw. Colon can at least kind of fill it in if he had to. Could give Moustakas a day off at third every now and then, even though he's not really a strong defender at third. Colon, that is. But, you know, it's still probably better than going with Infante there. So I guess it suits Colon better to be the utility guy than Infante at this stage. But still, I did think that Colon would have an opportunity to at least really compete for it. And he's got more at-bats, but I think some of that is still due to Infante's injury and trying to bring him along more slowly. But at this stage, I would expect Infante to get the job. And, you know, so far on the numbers, he's at least earned it. Granted, again, you know, 16 at-bats for Infante and 22 for Colon. So it's not like we're going off 2 months, but –
Yeah,
there's at least
small sample size implies.
Yeah, but there's at least a statistical justification that's pretty easy to point to from the Royals' side of things. So, yeah, I mean, it could still shake out. I mean, Cologne could go and hit well for the next 3 weeks, and Fonte could fall back down, or he could get hurt, and then you end up in the same kind of spot where, okay, now Cologne does get that job. So that could still happen. And Infante being healthy through a full season is a sucker bet to take. So yeah. I would not expect him to play more than 120 games. So I think Cologne will at least get a little bit of time there regularly. And hopefully, you know, he does start hitting and doesn't start to kind of grind it down and really press because he's struggling so far in spring. You know, hopefully he can continue with solid preparation and just go out there and try to do his job. And if he's called into it, great. And if not, well, you've got a guy that can play a few positions that you feel could start at least at one of them. And that's an okay spot to be in.
Yeah. And despite what spring training results might look like, you know, he's a guy that, you know, can come in a big spot and you don't have to worry about him being overmatched because he's been in literally the two biggest moments in his life. He's come through. He got on base in the wild card game in 2014 and scored what ended up being the game winning run. And then he, like I said, he got the game winning RBI in the World Series game 5 last year. So, you know, he's had the big spots. So when you're with a guy like Christian Colon, you can see him, you know, being okay in those spots, but we've been in that perpetual state of just wanting something more from Christian Colon. And,
yeah,
you know, I think this was the last kind of hurrah for me of maybe there is something there where, you know, wasn't what his, you know, the I believe it was the Placido Polanco comparisons when he was drafted. Not quite, obviously not at that level anymore, but just some like, okay, maybe he can be a slightly above average major league starter. And, you know, I just think if spring training continues to play out as it has, those days are those hopes are dashed, and you just got to think, well, maybe he's just a good, just a solid backup guy who can pick you up in a big spot and who can maybe start for a couple of weeks if he has to, if somebody gets injured, and, you know, you'll still be okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's still value in that for an organization.
Yep. It's just not what you hope when you take him fourth overall.
Yeah, exactly.
In a draft with three monsters ahead of him and,
yeah,
and have to still consider the Chris Sale thing, but that's a whole other thing.
That's a completely different.
When you start walking down that path, it just gets cold and chilly and scary. And
nobody likes it.
Ugh, God.
Nobody likes to go down that road. So last thing we'll hit on before we go to break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the right field. Talk about pitching and just a couple quick hits in the pitching category that I'll get your thoughts on, Mike. And number one, the Danny Duffy situation is really perplexing. So you've got Danny Duffy and your Donovan Turner, and I feel like the last 3 years, we've been kind of like, oh man, you know, if those two get it done, this team is just a force. You know, if your Donovan Ventura becomes that ace and Ventura becomes that solid two or three starter, you know, combine that with guys like Volquez and Kennedy, or insert that type of pitcher here, you know, whether it's James Shields or whether it's Jason Vargas, or, you know, James Shields obviously above a category above those guys, but you know what I mean? Just the other guys that you know what you're getting from. If you could put Ventura and Duffy on top of that, and then this team becomes even more of a force than a defending World Series champion, which is already a force. So, and Yordano Ventura last year, we've talked about it before, don't need to go into it now, but ups and downs. And this year, this spring training, he seems like he's locked in. He's ready to go. He's been doing really well. All the reports are that his command has been good. His fastball has been looking good. He's really been sharp. As far as Danny Duffy is concerned, the reports are the opposite. Hasn't looked sharp. Because, and I heard on the way home today, the game today, at one point he had 14 pitches. 9 of them were balls. And he's had a problem with his pitch counts getting away from him and hasn't been able to be consistent. So, I mean, where with Danny Duffy, where do you think his role on this team is going to be? I mean, we've talked about, you know, the ideal. The Royals want him to be in the starting rotation. Everybody wants him to be in the starting rotation. We've seen at the top end of his talent, he can be a really, really good major league pitcher, but the consistency hasn't been there. Where is he going to be when the season starts, kicks off?
I kind of thought he was going to get a real opportunity to be in a starting rotation, but I think at this stage he's going to end up in the bullpen. And, you know, I think that works for him. He said in the past that it's he's more comfortable that way, but at the same time, he's more valuable to the Royals if he can cover 175 innings instead of 50 to 70. And so, the bullpen maybe isn't the best way to get as much value, but if he's going to be inconsistent like he has been this spring, and again, it's spring training, it's only, you know, three appearances, but it's a lot of the same old things that he struggled with, you know, giving up home runs, lack of control, lack of command. And you know, that's where you start to think, well, the Royals have so many options for the starting rotation that they don't really have to force him to be in there. Plus, it's also a kind of a texture at the back of that rotation where guys like Chris Young and Chris Medlin and Dylan G, who just got added to the 40-man today, where those guys aren't really expected to cover 200 innings, but maybe cover 200 between them. And Duffy maybe fits within that kind of spot where, okay, he's maybe going to start 10 to 15 games this year. And, you know, if that's all they expect from him, then, yeah, I guess he starts the year out in the bullpen and tries to maximize everything there. He's got good stuff. I mean, we've seen it before. The changeup and the curveball can be really good, and he throws a good mid-90s fastball. But if he can't harness it, then, yeah, it's something they're not going to put him in the rotation, especially when they have options and when they have options who have been, you know, pitching reasonably well. I don't know what that means big picture. I think that you can probably guess that the Royals won't ever really feel comfortable saying that, hey, he's going to be our number two guy, our number three guy. I mean, he's pretty much back of the rotation from here on. With kind of that bouncing between the bullpen kind of career arc. So I don't know. It's troubling because, you know, you did see glimpses of it a couple of years ago. And if they could do something like get a reliable Danny Duffy and Yordano Ventura, then, you know, maybe they save some money and don't have to go out and sign Ian Kennedy like they did this year. But, you know, things being what they are, well, this is what they're at. And I still think Duffy can be a really good reliever, and he's going to be like the fifth or sixth guy out of the bullpen. So
that's the thing.
It's not like
even if he does come in the reliever. I mean, I think right now, if you ask the Royals, unless something drastic changes, it's pretty well set that sixth inning is Joaquin Soria, seventh inning is Luke Cochaver, eighth inning is Kelvin Herrera, ninth inning is Wade Davis. Maybe you flip flop Soria and Cochaver if you want. I don't know. Depends on where they think both are at, but. I mean, at that point, you know, Duffy's going to be sitting, not doing anything for a lot of games if that's the case, because, you know, even in some relief roles, he seems like he still hasn't been, you know, still struggled with pitch counts, you know, 25, 27, 30 pitches in an inning. And, you know, that's not ideal from a reliever, even though you have a little extra freedom since you're not expected to go five or six innings. I mean, you still... Where do you see him fitting in with that core bullpen?
I mean, they could probably still use him in any of those spots, you know, to help set up somewhere. The other thing, if he's in the bullpen, he can probably scrap some of those pitches and not really worry so much about them, you know, to where he doesn't feel like he has to establish this or that pitch. He can just go out and throw and face three, four hitters and get by. And you know, then you don't have to really worry about how you're pacing yourself. So as long as the control is there, then I think he'll be fine. But if he does continue to struggle, then you know it's going to be kind of difficult to fit him into that that group of you know, what we lovingly call cyborgs. It's just going to be tough to find a spot for him that isn't, you know, just being the seventh inning guy when someone needs an off day. It's a decent luxury to have, because, I mean, even an inconsistent Duffy is probably a better reliever than a lot of teams have in their setup spot. So, you know, that's kind of okay. But, you know, it's still not ideal for him or the Royals, or getting the most out of what kind of talent that he's always seemed to have, you know, from the minor leagues to now.
Kind of crazy that, like you said, the stuff that he has, I mean, he's got kind of that power type stuff that, you know, given you made a good point how he can kind of throw away some pitches. And, you know, if he were able to just focus on, you know, maybe two main pitches with a third to just kind of throw in to spice things up, I mean, that's kind of what your typical closer goes through. And Duffy's got the stuff. We've seen at times he's looked dominant enough that he could be a closer in a reliever role. And we're sitting here wondering where he could fit in this bullpen. I mean, Royals bullpen has been historically good each of the last 3 years. And each of the last 3 years, we said, man, they could be better this year. It's just insane.
And now Chenming Wong is hitting 95 miles an hour.
Good God.
Which is just like, what in the world? Like,
and
don't expect him to make the team, but who knows?
Who does know? I mean, with the Royals, and you know, that kind of brings us to the last thing we'll hit on right quick before we go to break. I mean, Dylan Gee, that's the guy that we've kind of talked about off the show about, could be one of those guys that, and Chenming Wong is also another, you know, you kind of hear in whispers like, hey, hold on, you know, nudge with the elbow a little bit, you know, hey, this guy's looking kind of good. And I mean, these could be the next two, you know, the next Ryan Madsens and the next, Scott Frazier,
Jason Frazier. And, Scott, you're probably thinking of Scott Downs.
Scott. Yes.
Cause they're basically the same
guy.
They're
the same guy,
but different throwing arms.
you know, and guys like that kind of the reclamation projects. And if Dylan Gee, is it Gee? Is it G? I think it's Gee.
It's G.
I've never known. It's G.
It's okay. G. Yeah.
Like, I've heard it on people talk about him. I've heard it both ways, but
it's probably Cisco.
Yeah. Well, probably or something like that. But
right.
So G and Wong, I mean, if those two make the team and put in, you know, a Ryan Madsen type year, 50 innings, 2.5 ERA, I mean, that's when it becomes like a national narrative about the Royals kind of pitching magic.
There's this reliever factory.
Yeah, especially if they can combine that with an Ian Kennedy resurgence. I mean, then you're looking at just like, man, Dave Island's got to be like coach of the year type of thing.
He's a wizard. It's just what he does. I mean, the thing with G is, I think they're going to want to see him start more. I don't think he's going to start right out of the gate, but I think he's got potential to be 15 to 20 starts. You know, last year he ended up getting kind of shuttled down to the minors because he was on the Mets, and the Mets were not hurting for starting pitching at any stage. So
the Mets are like the Rays were like 3 years ago, where they're like, we want a 6-man rotation because we can't decide who to send
out. And G really probably would have been able to stay up there, but there was just, they didn't need it. I mean, by the time they brought up Steven Matz, I mean, they still had Bartolo Colon pitching reasonably average, and he ended up getting into the bullpen. And I forgot the John Neese, another guy who's been a pretty good starter down the line, he ended up in the bullpen. So they ended up with like three guys who could start in about any rotation going into the minors, into the bullpen and things like that. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, he was really bad or anything. It's just that, you know, when he did sign with the Royals, it was like, that's one of the better minor league signings of the offseason. And it's telling, his opt-out clause was today, so he enacted it and the Royals added him to the 40-man roster, and that it was so early in the process was basically pretty much just understood that he was going to get added You know, and I think they'll start out with Medlin and Young in the rotation, and then they have G and Duffy back to kind of be swingmen and maybe spot start if necessary and things like that. So I think that's kind of where they're going to be going at least.
Yeah. And the as a side note, when you were listing off all those names, it's still on paper, you think, man, the Royals beat all those guys. The Mets pitching is so ridiculous, and how the Royals beat them. Well, crappy bullpen, that's how. But
right.
And back to the Royals pitching, it's kind of interesting that you know, you mentioned that, and if they do envision him in that starter role, I mean, that, you know, we've talked about the back end of the Royals rotation, and I'm at like 60%. Confidence level that Chris Medlin is going to be able to start like normal and, you know, basically be, I want to say a full year, but I think he's going to have a pretty low innings limit just because it's been so long. And last year he didn't pitch a ton of innings. So I wonder where that's going to be. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that Chris Medlin's going to get it back just because he was so good before his injury. But so if there is one, call it 1.5 spots that the Royals have to worry about, and you've got Chris Young, Danny Duffy, Dylan G, Kyle Zimmer, and Miguel Almonte all as possibilities for 1.5 spots.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're in pretty good shape. And if you get – if Ventura continues the momentum he's got in the spring and takes that step forward like we've all been wanting him to do for the last 2 years, and Kennedy's able to kind of right the ship – a little bit, and Volquez gives us what he gave us last year, then wow. I mean, that Royals are in pretty good shape then.
They have a lot of depth. They have a lot of inventory, which, you know, for them, they're going to have to kind of piece it together because they don't have that huge stud, but, you know, that's fine. It worked the last 2 years, basically, where they rolled with Shields, who was really good, and Volquez, who was really good last year, and then everybody else just kind of filled in. And, you know, when you can cut your game down to 6 innings, it helps quite a lot.
Yes.
So they're really in a good spot in that sense, too. So I don't think there's any reason for them to sway from that game plan. And they seem to be pretty comfortable in just embracing it at this stage. And it's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll take our break here. And then when we come back, we'll kind of go dive a little deeper, if you will, into the right field situation and see what to make of that whole thing. Yeah. So stick with us through the break, and we will see you back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Blasted to center. Back goes Rasmus. Grand slam, Mike Moustakas.
The Vault.
Anytime's a great time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn, but March is packed with good times. Stop in for a beer and the multiple TVs tuned to the Big 12 or NCAA tournament throughout the month. Or maybe you're looking for some liquid encouragement before the Westport 4-mile run on March 12th. Kelly's is open at 10 a.m. for runners and spectators alike. Grab some pizza from Joe's in the back to replenish those calories you burnt off running or watching. And you can celebrate St. Patrick's Day the way it's meant to be done, with a pint or two, or, well, drink responsibly, starting at 10 a.m. on the 17th. But if you can't make those days, any day will work. You'll get the same great service that's made Kelly's Westport Inn a Kansas City tradition since 1947. With live music on the weekends, drink specials, and an open rooftop for those warmer days and nights, it's always a good time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn in the heart of Westport.
Off in the distance, the game was dragging on. There's strikes on the batter, some runners are on. I don't know the inning, I've forgotten the score. The whole team is yelling and I don't know what for. And then suddenly everyone's looking at me. My mind has been wandering, what could it be? They point to the sky and
welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn of the Baseball Prospectus Kansas City website. Again, not quite yet, but
not sure how we're going to refer to that.
See, not sure how we're gonna bring that in. But trying it on for size, trying to iron out the details on that. But before the break, we talked about how we're going to delve into the Royals' right field situation. As we all know, there was no intention. Alex Rios was not re-signed, and there's no intention to do so. And the Royals, just as they have the last 2 years, will come in with right field a bit of a gap. The conventional wisdom was that this was going to be Jerod Dyson's time to shine, his shot. The Royals were going to give him every opportunity to seize the deal, be the starter, play every day, be that guy. Unfortunately, he is injured, and he's going to be out for an extended period, going to miss some of the regular season. And now they're going to start the season with somebody else in right field. So after the cuts that were made that we talked about before the break, it leaves this group of the Fantastic Five, we'll call them. you've got Travis Snyder, Whit Merrifield, Raymond Fuentes, Terrence Gore, and right now the leader in the clubhouse for that right field spot is Paolo Orlando. Paolo Orlando was there with the team basically all of last year, played huge for the team in a lot of moments when they really needed him to pick up for Alex Rios. Triple machine, grand slam, walk-off home runs. And what's funny is I watched a supercut of basically the entire Royals playoff run from 2015 to win the World Series, and Paolo Orlando was a defensive sub so much. Like, it's funny how many final outs of the game that he caught, at least four or five in all of the games that they won. It was pretty funny. So but anyway, that's why Paolo Orlando is the favorite, I think, right now. But of this other group, Mike, Snyder, Merrifield, Fuentes, Gore, how do you feel like that all kind of shakes out? Did any of these really have the opportunity to take it from Orlando?
I don't know. I mean, I think when they started, they had every intent of at least a platoon between Dyson and Orlando. Dyson, left-handed hitter, Orlando, a right-handed hitter. Neither of them really overwhelming favorites. Kind of, you know, Dyson has paid his dues enough to where I think he was going to get the opportunity. He can get on base. He plays good defense. He's got a lot of that energy to really kind of spark, kind of when the lineup turns over, if he's hitting ninth, he's really good in that role. So I think he was the favorite, but when he goes down, you know, first at bat in spring training, strains his oblique. So that's unfortunate. I think it does point to Orlando. They know what he's got. He's, you know, got the experience from last season. He's probably the easy favorite unless he really starts to fall off and somebody else gets hot. So I'm proceeding with the assumption that Orlando is going to be the opening day right fielder. But that still leaves the rest of the bench. So you're going to have a backup catcher. That's Butera. Let's assume that Colon does not beat out Omar Infante, and so he's your utility guy. Well, now you're kind of looking at the Royals have a pretty light schedule to start out. I mean, in the first actual week, they play Sunday the 3rd, they play the 5th, they play the 8th, they play the 9th. They don't really need to go with like an 8-man bullpen in any way. So I'm going to assume they're going to have two more spots open. So it really comes down to me, you know, how they're going to approach that. Do they want to use that as an opportunity to, you know, maybe they sneak Whit Merrifield in there, who's having a good spring and he's got a lot of buzz. He can play a lot of other positions. Or do they want to go with something similar to what they've done in the past, where Jerod Dyson has been that late inning pinch running defensive replacement, and go with a guy like Terrence Gore? Now, I don't know. Comparing these guys, you look at probably ideally Travis Snyder starts to hit a little more and then actually wins a job. They have him on a minor league deal. He's got an opt-out for March 30th. He's got some major league experience. He's only 28 years old. He's got some upside to him still. He's probably the best guy you could pair with Orlando, at least to start the year. But if they want to continue with kind of a speed presence, Fuentes has a lot of speed as well. He hits left-handed. He can kind of fill that same Dyson role. So I don't know. There's pros and cons to everything. If it's Terrence Gore for some reason, he's not going to hit at any level. So I don't really expect to see that. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, it kind of shakes out strangely. That's why I thought when they sent Eibner down and Jose Martinez down, that those guys were going to have a little bit more of an opportunity to play for that kind of spot. But it seems like they're ready to go with Orlando. And then it just kind of decides, you know, do they want to continue with the same kind of platoon? Well, then maybe it's Fuentes. Do they want to try to get some extra production? Well, maybe that's Snyder. If they want to go with flexibility, you know, maybe that's Whit Merrifield. But if they want to continue with the kind of Dyson stand-in, well, maybe that's Gore. So I guess there's some merit to all of that, and that you have two more bench spots allows you to kind of mix and match. So I think right now, as of yesterday, I was thinking Fuentes and Merrifield, because Merrifield does give you a lot of flexibility. He can play anywhere on the diamond. So that kind of gives you a little bit extra backup for Cologne if he's still struggling and things like that. Fuentes is already on the 40-man roster, so that's a benefit to him. He can still be that speed guy like Dyson has been. But I don't know. I think after now thinking about it a little bit more, and after Travis Snyder hit a home run yesterday, if he starts to actually come through and have some power and get on base a little bit more, I think they'd probably just go with Snyder and find some 40-man, you know, move that can accommodate him. And I think Fuentes, because you can actually feel like he can hold his own if he needs to hit. And the other thing with all of this is that when Jerod Dyson comes back, which maybe that's the middle of April, you know, you're not going to have to rely on some of those guys for a lot of games. So what it works out to is that it's not really a big decision, but it's still an interesting decision, because there are a lot of ways that the pieces can fit together. And, you know, the one thing that I would probably discount at this stage would be Snyder and Merrifield both making it, unless they're just on a crazy tear, because both would need to be added to the 40 man. And this time of year, those kind of things can be tough, because you've always got to bump somebody off the 40 man. The Royals don't have anybody who has an injury that they can move to a 60-day DL. They used that up when they brought G onto the 40 man roster with Mike Minor going on the 60-day disabled list. So I would think it'd be one guy who's on the 40 man and one guy who is not that needs to be added. And so if you ask me right now, I would say Fuentes and Snyder. And then if that means that they miss out on Merrifield, well, I don't think they're too worried about that. I think they've decided, yeah, he's got a lot of flexibility, but I don't think they really do expect him to be a big leaguer. He's kind of got that Anthony Seritelli and Ed Lucas kind of thing happening.
Anthony Seritelli.
Yeah, where it's like, yeah, he can probably, we're going to just leave him down there. And so,
he doesn't put you in a position where you have to play him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, if they lose Whit Merrifield somehow, which he's not even on the 40 man. So it's just like, they're not under any pressure to lose him. If they did though, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Now Snyder could still probably play for a big league team, and he has an opt out on the 30th. So that leads me to think that the Royals are going to be more inclined to keep him, because they always say it, and every team says it, it's just inventory. It's just keeping the guys that you can keep. And if you need to option somebody to do that, even if they're equal or even maybe a little better, it's just going to be what happens. And we've seen that time and again every spring with every team, where there's some veteran who they need to keep because of this kind of minor league deal, versus a guy who can be optioned down. And You know, that's just how it works out. So I think that bodes well for Snyder, and then it just kind of depends on how they want to go with Gore or Fuentes on that last spot. You know, and again, guy like Fuentes is going to have some trouble getting at bats because, you know, some of those guys got sent to Omaha. Well, I guess Bonifacio got sent to Double A, so maybe he would have some spots. But, I would say Fuentes and Snyder right now.
And I think what you mentioned is what the most interesting aspect of this is, and that is how they want to handle the situation in terms of the roles. Because if one thing that we know from the Royals last couple of years, and the reason why Terrence Gore is even thought of as possibly making a major league roster, is because the Royals really like having defined roles for their players. And I think they've discovered that the players respond to that as well. So, you know, Jerod Dyson always had that very defined role of, you're going to be the guy, you're going to come in, give us some pretty good defense in the late innings, steal some bases, be a threat on the base paths. Terrence Gore is his defense isn't what Dyson's was, but in terms of that base path threat, he's the closest that you can come to a Dyson. So, you know, if they really want, like you said, if they really wanted to go that route and kind of fulfill that exact same role, then he's who you would go. But it doesn't really, I don't think, to start a – if this was maybe the last month of the season, you might say, okay, you know, Dyson will be out for the last month of the season. He'll be back for the playoffs. Let's just bring up Terrence Gore, because you'd have everything figured out by then. But to start a season, I don't think that's the route you can go.
Yeah, and if they're ever put into a position where he has to hit, I mean, you know, he can hit professional pitching better than I can for sure, but
right.
I don't – nobody expects him to hit, and there's not a lot to really look at that tells you that, hey, he's going to hit. He can get on base. It's not like he's just a pinch runner. He's not Herm Winningham from the A's back in 70, whatever year that was. But at the big league level, if he's ever up there, I wouldn't expect a whole lot out of him. But maybe for the first,
I'd expect about what I saw from Raul Mondesi in the World Series.
Right, just like don't lose the bat, basically.
Yes.
Just, you know, overmatched. And Gore hasn't – I don't think he's got an at-bat above Double A. So that combined with just his skill set, it's just not a thing for him. He's going to make his money by being that guy like Dyson, who can come in, steal the base. And that's the best way to use him too. You know, it's – if you get a guy like back when Billy Butler was on the team and it was late, Butler got on base good enough, well enough, I should say, once he gets on first, well, it's an automatic lift, and you're already like, if Billy Butler's on base 35% of the time, well, you know, then you've got a 35% chance of Dyson being able to be on first, which is basically like at that stage, 90% chance that he's on second. Versus right. Dyson having to get on base himself at 30%, you know, what is his career on base percentage, like 305, 310?
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, it's just where you're able to use them in a more efficient and more effective way, and it's leveraging their skill set in the best way that you can. And, you know, you can't guarantee that Dyson at the plate will get on base, but if you're pinch running him, you're absolutely assured that he's on first base. And that's where the biggest advantage for those kind of guys comes from. And for Gore, that's the only role he can play on a big league roster. At least the other guys, they can kind of do something else. You know, Snyder has been there before. Fuentes is still a pretty decently regarded prospect and young player. Merrifield can play everywhere. So, you know, that gives them a little bit extra utility for Ned Yost to use them. But, you know, I guess when you also continue to look at it, your lefties are Fuentes and Snyder, your righties are Orlando Gore and Merrifield. So that probably breaks it up to where, I don't know that they would go with, a righty to sub out for Orlando. So that probably doesn't bode well for Merrifield. But I don't know. I mean, a lot can really happen. And if Merrifield's still hitting well and playing well, then who knows? You know, he could make it. They could just go with the best guys and then just make it work however they have to make it work. And if Dyson's ready to come back on time, then, well, then you got to look at these guys on your team. And if he's not, then you can continue to ride it out. And I think any of them could probably work. They'd have to be implemented differently. But like right now, I think Snyder, they really want him to make it. And they mm-hmm. probably feel comfortable with Fuentes because he can basically just jump in there and you know, they can bounce him down. He's got options. They can, you know, move him around if they need to. And when Dyson comes back, that's the easy guy to send down. And then you can kind of see where it shakes out. If Orlando's still hitting well, if Snyder's hitting well, then, you know, I don't know what you do. I guess you go back to Dyson playing the same role he did, which kind of stinks. But at the same time, like I just said, it's
they good problems.
Yeah, it's like they can use him pretty decently and pretty much when they want to. You know, they can use him at the best opportune time and make it work for him.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll leave you.
Good. I'm losing my voice.
What?
Good. I'm losing my voice some more.
Yeah, and I've left my wife alone with my daughter for long enough, so I should go give her a respite, unless she's sleeping, in which case, awesome. But anyway, so big news, the baseball prospectus partnership now. I don't know if that's partnership is the right word, but venture joint, whatever. But baseball prospectus,
assimilation, absorption.
absorption. I like the absorption. We're being absorbed into baseball. Still, the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You're still Michael Engel. I'm still Jeff Herr. This is the way it always has been and always will be.
We've always been the caretaker.
Yes. So, thanks. If we don't say it enough, you know, thanks again to everyone who listens, every single listen that you've ever given, any recommendation to friends and family, if they're looking for a Royals podcast, you know, really appreciate it. And, you know, the reason that people look to us and that we were asked to be the podcast for this new endeavor under Baseball Prospectus is because of you guys, the fans, and the way you've responded to us. So couldn't thank you enough. Thank you, everyone. And we look forward to much bigger and better things. We've got a bunch of watch parties planned.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This weekend we got the Kelly's watch party, right?
The 19th. The Royals are going to be on Fox Sports Kansas City starting at 2:00. They play the Rangers. I'll probably get the Kelly's, I don't know, noon or so, try to scout out a spot for people to show up. Follow our Twitter at KC Baseball Vault, and I'll try to tweet out where people start to congregate off of there, or follow myself, Michael Engel, or follow Jeff at the Jeff Report. So I don't want to leave him out.
If it's nice, we might be up on the roof, which would be awesome.
Yep. Yep. That's my hope. And
Kelly's rooftop is fun times.
Yep. So that's something to look forward to. 21 and up only, but you know, that's how it goes. But but they've got pizza, they got beer, and they'll have baseball on TV, and they'll have multiple TVs everywhere. So there's going to be some basketball going on too. You can be able to see that as well. So you know, it's not going to miss out on any of that. And they're also your spot all season long for baseball games. If you can't make it out to the K, that's the next best place.
Indeed it is. So, yeah, everyone, come on out and help support Kelly's. Been a great sponsor to us. And watch some Royals baseball and have fun with a bunch of other Royals fans. March 19th. We hope to see a lot of you there. But thank you all so much for listening. And I think we're going to leave you with that on this podcast. And we will see you next time. And as always, go Royals.